the midweek drive, zooming into the future and energized by the now. Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
Wish it dance, gentlemen. I'm afraid my card is full.
I can vouch for Lord Sinclair.
Oh. Get Mr. Sandor back to the hotel and do your job this time. Thanks. I really am sorry, Mr. Lord Sinclair. Yeah, well, if you hadn't hollered, would you... You all right?
Don't worry about me. Did you get that girl?
Girl? Which girl?
That's always a good question.
Chemistry. It's a fine subject, a great science, but also in the entertainment world, it's something which many people will say is indefinable. But maybe we get some smidgen of chemistry when we look at the interaction of Roger Moore and Tony Curtis in this one season of The Persuaders, with, of course, a villainess who doesn't say anything, but just smiles and looks very pretty. Of course, we also have Larry Storch in there, best known for F Troop and a variety of other keen folk, but as is the case with Resonance Rewind, clearly looking for the girl, finding the girl, all sorts of things at the heart of the whole issue. Jared Palmer, what did you make of this mid-season episode directed by Val Guest, of course, known for much of his work with Hammer Horror and so on? And Angie.
Well, I was a little bit confused about what was going on to begin with, because I haven't actually seen the full series myself. I know this was one of the series that made Roger Moore popular, I think, just before he became Bond. So for me, I think this was it was an interesting episode. I think I was a bit lost at what was going on, but I did like sort of like the chemistry they had in terms of the characters. And I did think that it was interesting to see sort of the rivalries between Danny and Brett Sinclair, and also you having Judge Fulton. I think it was a very weird show that I think you had to watch episode one to sort of understand the series. So I'm coming in this with a new perspective, but I thought it was interesting. But I think maybe I would have liked a little bit more context to the sort of like background of the characters a little bit more when watching this.
In essence, probably the opening credits give you all you need to know about these two individuals who are basically international playboys, one born with a silver spoon in his mouth, obviously Lord Brett Sinclair with the Anglo approach there, the English lord, and of course Danny Wilde, a boy from the Bronx who is effectively a self-made millionaire, worked his way up through the financial markets and become a success. And we see in this particular episode probably a deeper insight into certainly Danny Wilde's character than we've seen to many others. We looked a few months ago at Greensleeves, an episode, of course, in which Lord Brett Sinclair impersonates himself to actually deal with the shenanigans going on in a country house that he thought had gone to wreck and ruin. But again, there's something about this particular episode, and it'd be interesting to get the view of our regular ITC scholar, Rick Davey, on this. Sadly, Rick was unable to join us for this one, but I know Kite Media are very much big fans of ITC. Of course, Annette Andre, one of our regular co-hosts on the Midweek Drive, also regularly appeared with Roger Moore and did make a guest appearance in this particular show in an episode we also looked at called Power Switch. But you kind of get a pace, and some might say a last hurrah for the 1960s. It's colourful, it's set in Cannes, unlike a lot of other ITC series. They don't just have back projection to actually illustrate that it's Cannes. They actually are there physically. It's a mixture of obviously sets in Pinewood or Elstree, and indeed on location shooting, etc. And you see that almost heart-rending sequence where Danny Wilde cannot believe that his best mate, his friend that he grew up with, could in any way, shape, or form be the villainous hitman, the gangster who's effectively designed to take out the union official. And again, an interesting cultural points because the union, certainly in the 1970s, not necessarily Britain nor America's favorite people. So you have an interesting take there in terms of how things are operating. And of course, the love that the union manager or the union representative actually has for the movie. So you get a number of interesting representatives there in terms of how you're seeing both the movies being presented, how you're seeing people really going to the movies for escapism. This is what Angie's character, Larry Storch, kind of works through. I was particularly impressed and still am with the way in which we had almost the subliminal flashbacks. Very, very quick flashbacks to monochrome experiences of Danny Wilde running through the streets with Angie, and how that obviously reaches its crescendo in the shootout at the end from that point of view. And obviously, as I say, the notion of Kyle Chandor, the not quite villain of the piece, but victim, perhaps potential victim, that Judge Fulton is so keen to obviously have testify against the crime lords and bosses, etc., who've obviously employed Angie to take him out and act as a hit person on it. I'm not sure whether that actually helps at all in terms of pointing out some of the aspects of this particular series. In essence, the opening episode overture sets the scene, but if you haven't seen that, I think it is one of those shows and season where you can pretty much dip into any one of them and find sort of certain aspects which work through the process. However, let's talk favorite moments. Did you I mean, I've already shared in a sense one of my favorite moments, which was the very short flashbacks, and they were very short. I mean, they were almost blink and you'll miss it in many ways. I mean, some went on for a few seconds, but they were fairly tight for that. Any thoughts from yourself, Jared?
I would say, in terms of favorite moments, what I did find interesting was the bit where in the pool table when I think Brett was having a go at the Americans for basically stealing everything from British sort of culture, sort of like sports and everything, which I thought was quite interesting because you wouldn't expect. I wouldn't say you wouldn't expect to see it, but I usually when I think of a TV show with two with a British and an American characters, I would expect them to have a bit of arguments, but I to see his bitter side get the better of him, that's very interesting to see because we're more with Bond from me watching him as his tenure, you didn't see that as much. There were only certain times where he actually got a bit bitter or he just had a dislike. But for this one, I can sort of see where Moore got that idea for Bond to get that from him. So I think that did play well into that. And I did also like the tension there between them, sort of like referencing sort of the reflections between the two societies in a like a very subtextual conversation. And even though I did think it did feel a bit out there, but I thought that, yeah, I see what they were doing with that. I see what they were trying to do in terms of it and trying to like play on each other's insecurities. And I think it really did the scene justice for me.
This, of course, was Roger Moore's fourth major series before he actually became Bond. He had starred as Ivanhoe, of course, the Walter Scott character. He also appeared fairly regularly in Maverick, a Western within the States. And of course, he was most famous up until The Persuaders for The Saint, and arguably still remembers, or still very much is fondly remembered, as the incarnation of Simon Templar, which certainly was a hit TV series of the 60s. Then, of course, he would effectively take on board the mantle of Bond. It's a debate we've had before on the Resonance Rewind about people's favorite Bonds and so on. There are a number of times where clearly he does show a hard edge to Bond that arguably Daniel Craig or indeed Sean Connery could have actually applied in their own way. One that springs to mind is the sequence in For Your Eyes Only, where effectively he tips the one of the villains' lock over the edge, etc. Likewise, he does a similar scene with respect to Spy Who Loved Me, and of course in Live and Let Die, Rosie Carver doesn't exactly come to a good end with respect to her incarnation with Bond as well. But this is a case where he's being kind of the nice guy. He's being arguably an incarnation of British class systems, class value systems, and so on. And you get that juxtaposition of how clearly both Wilde and Sinclair have a mutual respect for each other, to the extent that effectively Brett Sinclair comes and rescues Danny Wilde. You know, there is that sequence, and of course the switch that they had the wrong lucky number. Not sure again whether it was necessarily wise to be shouting out their tactics whilst the two villains of the piece are actually there, but maybe we can stretch credibility a bit from that perspective. In terms of, I mean, the writer Milton S. Gelman, don't really know a great deal about what he's actually put together in terms of times past and in terms of looking at the IMDb material for Milton. It would seem basically he had a reasonably long life. Born in Milwaukee, was a writer and actor, known for Gloria Gould, Capablanca, and The Persuaders, of course. So this was one of his areas that he did sort of work within the system. As a sort of episode itself, which was also compartmentalized or packaged together as a movie in the mid-70s, which was also in the time where TV shows, if they could actually, before video came on the scene, before Blu-rays, before DVDs and streaming, you would obviously look to milk as much as possible out of this. So it was also repackaged together. Let's talk characters. Let's begin to delve into that. I mean, probably today you would not get away with having a silent villainess unless there was very good reasons in terms of why she was mute. I mean, obviously the argument for Gerry Anderson of Marina in Stingray is that, you know, a beautiful woman and she doesn't say anything. Well, Kirsten Lindholm here, who plays, of course, the villainess in the piece, who we kind of see kind of leads people along, coordinates things, is very crucial to the end piece of the plot. I think without any words whatsoever, manages to convey quite an interesting sense of menace, including, of course, the sequence where Danny is actually drugged. Again, a noted narrative trope which emerges regularly in spy-fi series of the 60s and 70s, where the hero is drugged, and then there's the usual slow motion camera shots as consciousness is slowly lost, etc. And I've already cited Angie himself, played by Larry Storch, I think portrays quite an interesting line, especially his line where effectively he demonstrates, or he appears to demonstrate, that effectively he can't handle guns. He's really scared of guns, clay pigeon shooting. It's just not his sport. And he kind of calls out both Brett Sinclair and indirectly his friend Danny on why they would actually want him to actually relive this trauma of his childhood. Anyway, your favorite characters, Jared.
I would have to say for me, it's Lord Brett Sinclair, but I think that's because he reminds me a little bit of Bond, but with a bit more of an upper class sort of tone. And I think I did see where sort of the idea of inspiration for Bond came from as well for his character. And I think I really did like how although he could play the rich, like, lord of the upper class British system, there were times that, like, I thought he was actually being sincere. And I did like the bit where I think he stops Danny in the car bit and he tells them, like, you can't go back to the way things were, Danny, because they never was. And I thought that was a really interesting thing for a character to say towards. Because, like, I think where Danny was living in the past, he was being very protective of his friend, and then it turns out his friend wasn't the person he thought. So I thought it was an interesting way that, in his own sense of way, I think Brett was actually just trying to protect Danny in some sort of form. But ultimately, I think just because it's Roger Moore, and, like, I just associate him with Bond very well, so that's my next reason for it.
I know Victoria Simmons, who, again, it looks like she's unable to join us on this one, was a big fan of Danny Wilde in Some Like It Hot, and clearly Tony Curtis, I should say, rather than Danny Wilde. But Tony Curtis was very much a Hollywood superstar, and known, obviously, for his movies and so on, and adventures. It's an interesting line there in terms of Moore, from a country which, in essence, is dealing in nostalgia, i.e. Britain, alerting Danny to the point, as you said there, you need to look forward as opposed to back, because the past is never what we seem or what we think it was. And that rosy-tinted glow was something which, again, shows the bizarre nature of the whole thing. And maybe life as well. Maybe it's a poignancy that I think Val Guest manages to capture in this particular episode, despite the fact that, as I say, there is clearly the happy ending, or the sort of happy ending at the end, even though his childhood friend is actually dead. Clearly Wilde effectively puts that behind him, and they're off to the next adventure, as you'd expect from the point of view of series television at the time as well. Okay, let's move into scores then. As I say, we still will be speaking, hopefully, to Jessica Burtis and to Anna Koshkinol, who will have their views. We might even be joined by Victoria Simmons as well on this programme. So before we have another little excerpt from this particular episode of The Persuaders, what is the Jared Palmer, what's the JP score for Curtis and Moore in Angie, Angie? Nothing to do with the classic Helen Reddy song, Angie Baby, which, of course, we might well play into the programme as well, or indeed Angie Bowie, David Bowie's first relation. But there we are.
Well, I would say for me, I'd give it a 6. I think I when I watched the episode again, I got the idea of it. So I think rewatching it a second time made me appreciate it. I did like the cinematography. I love a lot of the location shots, which I think some of them must have been filmed out of like both America and Britain. I think somewhere in like France and Italy, which I was thinking it was similar to. I'm just trying to think. For Your Eyes Only, because I thought when the car scene went by that place looked like that scene from For Your Eyes Only. And I was thinking they must have used the same location for filming.
I think that's an interesting one, because obviously ITC under Lou Grade were known for, as I said, using a lot of stock footage. But by this time the company was doing so well, and obviously on the back of two international stars, that they felt they could actually go overseas. They would follow this up clearly with The Protectors, with Robert Vaughan, Ari Dylan Porter, and Tony Ann Holt, a half-hour series which also used a lot of on-location filming, and indeed the very short-lived and often much lamented episode, the six episodes of The Zoo Gang with John Mills and company in there. Okay, I think we've made that particular point. Jared, clearly you will be going. Oh, by the way, would you go for Brett Sinclair's vehicle, or would you go for the Ferrari of Danny Wilde? Which car would you actually opt for? Because these were iconic vehicles of the time.
I'd have to go with the Ferrari for the moment, just because it's a classic.
Yeah, I had a feeling it might have been the Ferrari, which runs out. We might actually have to add that for another scenario. Okay, for the moment, Jared Palmer, huge thanks. And now, back to the episode.
There's a siren radio. What a scenario without siren radio. Turn up everyone, save a siren sound. Siren radio. Come link into Miami, Paris, to our global community wants to hear it play. Let them all create, students participate. Keep on keeping. say Siren Radio.
Hey there, Tiger. You know what? I done a bad thing. Long road, fast track. End of the race for me.
You're the hitman.
This man's more like it. First time, Danny. I never missed a contract before. They're closing in on me. Had to come back. Only friend they ever had was you. Just want to say goodbye. Listen to me, Danny. I gotta fade fast. Remember the promise we made to each other? I'm gonna hold you to it, just in case.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You'll remember!
Where you been?
You're not on this trip. You get back to the room. You tell Ben that I get the money or blow the whole thing. Have you got that? Well, come on, move it!
Angie! Angie!
Well, we found out what Jared Palmer made of this particular adventure, the 10th, of course, in the 24 episodes run of The Persuaders. But somebody who's quite a fan, certainly of Greensleeves, in fact, such a fan, she decided to actually watch several of the other episodes as a binge scenario, might have a whole new take on Danny Wilde's encounter with his childhood friend, Angie, of course. Let's find out. Victoria Simmons, your thoughts, please, on this Val Guest-directed adventure.
Okay, I'll say it's not my favourite one. The last one we watched was a lot better. But it had two, for me, distinct storylines. And both were actually fairly sad.
Mm.
I felt really traumatised during the whole thing. Because you've got the one storyline that is... two people that haven't seen each other, and there's a love story there of childhood friendship.
Mm.
But you've also got the side of the two, if you're two supposedly teammates trying to get the bad guy, if you like, then you kind of need to work as a team, and it just shows what happens when you're not working as a team.
Mm. Indeed so, and I think that is one of the challenges. I mean, the notion of never being able to look back and that aspect that Jared had pointed out, where Brett effectively says to Daddy, you can't go back, we can't go back in time, we can't go home again. And the fondness that clearly the Angie and Danny actually had as children, lost forever. So yeah, very much poignant, piquant moment there.
I found myself just going, please don't be the baddie, please don't be the baddie.
Yeah. I mean, I think certainly most of us did, and certainly, as I pointed out, I thought the way in which Val Guest directed this, Val Guest, of course, who directed the Quatermass Experiment, and several Quatermass adventures, he was a good, solid director of both motion pictures and adventure series, certainly relayed that. Okay, we'll talk magic moments or sad moments in a few moments. Let's hopefully connect with Jessica Bertus, who this time around is actually in Paris, moving around in all sorts of ways, and obviously outside in Paris. So I think, Jessica, you've got to actually acknowledge whereabouts in the capital of one of the countries that is blessed by Victoria Simmons. I think we're by the Arc de Triomphe by that. Or am I completely wrong on that basis? Share with us, where are you actually based?
No. No, you're completely right. It is at the Arc. So it is a windy but sunny day. And sorry, we were rushing around trying to figure out ticket stuff. But yeah, I'm in France. So it's in honor of the show. I just went to France just for the show, actually, for the French Riviera episode.
This is, of course, a whole new take on Resonance Rewind, that we actually take Resonance Rewind on the road and actually go to the countries that are actually featured, or indeed the planets that are actually featured in Resonance Rewind. So, you know, very important and nice to see that obviously Victoria decided to actually come to London. So you have that London-Paris connection together, obviously, with the Anglo-American connection, all working together. It shows that we're really echoing a whole range of art imitating life and vice versa. Okay, Jessica, enough of the meta-narrative. Let's get down to the narrative itself. What are your thoughts on Angie Angie?
I thought it was a really fun episode. I know we've seen the Persuaders before, but it's still a show that I feel like I'm still actually getting into. But funnily enough, they were playing the Persuaders at the hotel in Ireland. So me and my friend were just watching episodes of Persuaders in the hotel. The reruns, so that was nice. But I thought that this episode, it was in a really interesting location, with it being so summery, but I thought there's nice contrast between the summer weather and then this whole question of an assassin. And I thought that the idea of bringing in an old friend who could be a villain, I thought that was very interesting. I thought it was a fun episode more than the others, I think because it was so exciting, and there was that whole element of, is this character who we kind of have an investment in an assassin? And I thought that that was just very different from the other episodes, I feel like, that we've seen. Sorry, there's a band playing in the background. It's a bit, yeah, there's a lot going on. But
it's good that you're actually around, and at least you're not acting as a silent but charming assassin's mole who effectively is dropping her handbag in a particular area to actually ensure that that's the cue. By which, obviously, the execution can actually take place. I mean, Victoria, slightly different take there from Jessica in terms of the line. Are you still sort of going to be moved by the more melancholic aspects of this, or is it just a case of, well, it all ended okay, even though they didn't know what each other's lucky numbers were?
No, I completely agree that it grabbed my attention. I just don't think it was as good as the last one that I saw. And I think I was just more sad about the whole friend situation. And yeah, I felt for Denny when he was sort of going, oh, but it's my friend, you can trust him, I know him. And every time you're like, your heart's just breaking because you know that he's going to be the bad guy. And
yeah, unfortunately, life sometimes actually does throw us curveballs with respect to that, and folk that we might have sort of thought we could actually relate to. Maybe that was not necessarily the system from that point of view. Again, the direct quote from Brett Sinclair's, the character Brett Sinclair, "Forgive my rare sincerity, but everything passes and changes, even old friends." So Jessica, what were your favourite moments? What were the moments that effectively, for you, point? Was it more of the melancholy point magic moments, or was it the adventure of the Cannes Film Festival and the pacey music and all the other aspects that were there?
I think seeing them on the beach with the rifles, that was just really, I don't know, something about that was just hilarious, the imagery, but it also felt very Bond-esque almost. Just this idea of the French beach and it's sunny, and then these just two dudes just have these guns and there's an assassin plot happening and betrayal. And I just thought that that was, I don't think that was a really interesting moment. I feel like that was kind of like, if that was a screenshot, you would see that floating around on Pinterest or something. Just the visuals of it were so stark and contrasting. I thought it made for a very interesting part of the episode.
It was certainly one of those classic areas where we saw the tone shift, and this apparently sort of light-hearted scenario, which we'd moved earlier, obviously, in from, I mean, two games, and here we have two playboys. First of all, they're playing snooker or pool, and we have
But didn't we start off with seeing someone get shot, though? The jump was all
indeed.
over the place.
From snooker pool to skeet shooting, and that obviously thing which we now know is very much calling out Angie as the villain, but he effectively played true to his character, his deep character. And I suppose that line suggests you never really know what the person's character happens to be. Danny clearly thought he did, but even then, when push came to shove, he didn't recognize that here we actually had a villain that we were seeing from that point of view. Even though, in many people's eyes, union bosses who actually turn against their union and Teamsters, etc., might be seen as villainous as well, despite what Judge Fulton would say. What about your favourite moment, Victoria?
Yeah, when they're playing games, the snooker, the clay pigeon, all of that sort of rivalry between everybody, one person trying to prove that he's a good guy, one person trying to prove that he's a bad guy, that kind of comes all together. I like that part.
Tempted to actually say we need to have another resume ITC series with Jessica Burtis travels the world, given that she's moving all over from Ireland through to the to Paris and so on, solving crimes and dealing with adventures while sorting out
This is
Residence
true.
Rewind as well. Yeah. Music, of
Yes.
course, by Victoria Simmons. It goes without saying, because I think some of those
Yes, the
soundtracks would slot
soundtrack.
into place.
Well, it's all done in France, so technically.
Yeah, true to the whole sort of system. Okay, what about characters, Jessica? I mean, we had an interesting range of characters who are actually here, including obviously the leads of Brett Sinclair and Danny Wilde. We of course had Judge Fulton, and then of course we had Angie, the silent model played by Kirsten Lindholm, and of course the union gangster boss as well. Who was actually played, and we obviously mentioned Larry Storch as Angie, and Lionel Merton as Ben, etc. Any thoughts from yourself?
I think Angie was interesting, but then again, I feel like all of my favorite characters end up not living through the episode for some reason when I pick a person instead of, Rover the ball. But I think the silent villain, she was interesting. I wish we'd seen more of her because she just looked very cool. And it's that kind of, I don't know, I think I might just be very biased towards the kind of 60s pop look. And that a lot of the characters have. I don't know. I think maybe I'm just like a bit biased. So I'm just like, oh, she has the coolest look, so she's my favorite. But I feel like she was an interesting character for someone who was so quiet. But she definitely was the most intriguing. Even though Angie was the assassin, kind of like backstory thing, I think that she was also just more interesting, with the whole poisoning situation. But just in general, I think.
Yes, certainly Larry Storch was somebody who to me was much better known at the time as being one of the comedy stooges in a series about the USA cavalry called F Troop, which I always used to enjoy. F Troop, probably together with the Munsters and the Addams Family, being half-hour sitcoms that were very much indicative. I think also I'd throw in my favourite Martian there, some of which we might also be talking about, as well as Mork and Mindy. But let's not forget, in terms of obviously the characters, and in terms of women characters, we of course had the bank secretary Anna Brett, who effectively had the. I mean, that's where Danny Wilde is arguably that he's most flirtatious, where effectively in leading him to Judge Fulton, he obviously sort of does a slightly, some might say, sort of arguably suspicious sort of walk on the whole thing, but maybe that was charm, etc. Jessica, your thoughts on the fashions? Because although this was not quite the 60s, it was 70, 71 when this was actually shot. Did you feel as though the fashions kind of echoed those? Or did you think, yes, this is the way forward? We go back to the 60s next week, inevitably.
I do think it was interesting seeing the clothes. I think that they're always very, I mean, the colors that were surrounding them, it's a very colorful episode. And I feel like the main characters, even though their clothes aren't always super colorful, I feel like they're still interesting visually, but I did like seeing, like at least on the beach, a lot of swimsuits were colorful. And I think that this episode had a lot of that, like just saturation that I feel like I think of when I think of the 60s. And I feel like that also came through with this, even though, like you're saying, it's early 70s. I feel like it still had that spirit then of the colorful 60s.
Yeah, I think obviously it's one of the reasons why, because it was shot originally on film, it's transferred so well to Blu-ray, as well as obviously DVD, and of course is available on streaming services as well. Victoria, what about your favorite characters or characters or
Well,
character?
Danny, he's always up there. I mean, I'm a fan, but yep, Lord Sinclair and our silent but deadly female. I had all these questions going, why is she silent? Is it because she's mute? Is it because her English isn't very good and she just understands it? Or is it because they're suppressing the women?
I think, as far as the real answer is concerned, I think, yeah, it's a fair point. It's because the actress who played the role couldn't actually speak any English at all, so they
You
decided
go,
to go
there's
for
your answer.
the language option. Although that wasn't made clear, obviously, on screen, and maybe you could say, yes, we probably didn't need to know. But no, it wasn't a case of Gerry Anderson, as in Marina, having a sort of silent character. Who would just basically be window dressing for the whole thing. And in any way, she was a key plot point mover. After all, she was responsible for drugging Danny Wilde, and effectively knocking him unconscious with a metaphorical equivalent of a Mickey Finn, which again was key to the development. And the first time where Wilde realizes for the first time that actually Angie, his childhood friend, might have been the villain and wasn't necessarily the good guy, and the good cowboy. Who, when they were playing cowboys and Indians, was obviously part and parcel of that in the streets of New York back in presumably what I suspect would have been the 1940s. So I think we're probably talking about 1940s New York, given Wilde would be in his the character would have been in his early 30s or maybe early 40s. So we're talking either late 30s or early 40s in terms of those very fast flashbacks. Jessica, your score then for The Persuaders episode 10. Angie, Angie.
I think I'm going to give this one probably a 7.5. No, I'm going to give it an 8 because I actually really did like the colors and I like the whole idea of turning a plot back where it's an old friend and can you trust them and that betrayal of realizing that you don't always know someone as well as you do or that people have grown and changed entirely. Which I think, whether your friend is a villain or not, you can everyone can relate to a little bit. So I think this is actually a really great episode. It's my favorite that we've seen of the first.
Favorite of the Persuaders. I think you just muted yourself before we got the final words out there, but I think we managed to get those sorted through. Victoria, what about yourself? What's your score
Yes,
going to be?
favorite of the persuaders.
I'm gonna give it a 7. But I would also like to give a shout out to the cars that were used. I thought they were actually really nice.
And let's use the question we gave to Jared, of course. Aston Martin or Ferrari, what would your choice be, Victoria?
Aston Martin.
Oh, very classy and not as in your face, which is very good, much like yourself. Jessica.
I think I have to agree with Jared, probably the Ferrari. I mean, I don't know. It's just the idea of it is just so cool and it's so, it looks so iconic.
But it's not English.
But Italian obviously has a play in part to play in the whole thing, and yeah, we'd have to
It's
get a
Cannes, so
perspective.
they can have Ferraris, but
Indeed. Okay, next week for Resonance Rewind, we stay with ITC, but we have ITC very much under Lou Grade, and the return of a series in which the three lead characters never have a hair out of place. They could be wandering around the Arc de Triomphe on a blustery day, and their hair would be immaculate. It would not actually move one iota, no matter how stressed they happen to be. A point that Jessica made when she saw the initial opening episode of The Champions, which was, of course, the beginning a wee while ago. We're seeing how the champions, that's Craig Sterling and Richard Barrett and Sharon MacReady, of course, played by Stuart Damon and William Gaunt and Alexandra Bastido, actually cope with a whole new scenario in the heart of London, in the middle of the 60s when they're dealing with drug issues and getting drug dealers off the streets, with a few interesting twists and indeed arguably twerks to actually be considered with respect to the champions to Catch a Rat, the upcoming episode of Resonance Rewind. For now, to Jared Palmer, to Victoria Simmons, and to Jessica Bertus on location in Paris, huge thanks, and keep on resonating.
Angie, promise, remember?
Angie.
No man-made cages for us. Make sure Angie. Nobody puts us away. Better off dead.
Angie.
You okay? I'll tell you something, your lordship. You got style.
Huh. You're not too bad yourself, but let's not get maudlin. The timing was perfect, thanks to you.
Good. I remembered your lucky number was 5.
Very good. Especially as it happens to be 7.
7? Good, I think I've done.
Well, of course, we've heard the views of Jessica Bertus actually in Paris. We've also heard from wonderful land of Victoria Simmons, now in London, of course, and we've heard Jared Palmer. But what about Anna Koshkinel, the Persuaders at the Cannes Film Festival? Angie, Anna, what were your thoughts on this particular adventure?
Well, I actually, Alex, enjoyed it very much. I really liked Danny and I liked his chemistry with Laura Sinclair. To be honest, when I saw that Angie was actually a man, not a woman, I was surprised. I don't know why. I never expected it to be a man. And I also liked Marissa a lot. I was quite surprised to see that she did not say a word for the entire episode. I think we've had episodes like this where one of the characters wouldn't say a word, but she had quite a significant role even so. But yes, it was good. It was actually good. At times their fights were quite odd because you could see they weren't actually punching each other that hard, but I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
Yes, I think when I first saw it, I myself was a little bit confused, specifically because obviously Angie Baby was a Helen Reddy song, which I think we might squeeze in at the end of this particular piece, all about a somewhat surreal experience and mystical experience of a girl called Angie. And of course, you think of it being short of for Angela, but of course, there's Angelo. And I think, given the Italian background, the Italian American background of both Danny Wilde and, of course, the character played by Larry Storch of Angie, then I think certainly we can actually see where it goes. And of course, we do have that very almost heartrending moment at the end where clearly Angie has been shot by one of the two major villains in the piece who obviously took that on board. I think the character of Lionel Merton playing Ben, who what we think is actually going to be the assistant and helper for Kyle Shandor, played by John Alderson. But in the end, of course, he ends up shooting Angie. And say those two words which give the name to the title, of course, uttered by Tony Curtis. Before, of course, it all ends to a certain extent very positively. And apart from the confusion over what the real lucky number was, the two cars drive off into the sunset into their next adventure. So an interesting line there in terms of the whole experience. We've talked, obviously, with other folk about one of the key things about this episode, of course, being probably that very personal quote and very important quote, which arguably relates to every human being on the planet. In this particular case, it was Lord Brett Sinclair, in which he says to Danny Wilde, "Everything passes and changes, even old friends." So again, the whole notion that all things must pass to the fore there. However, what about magical moments for yourself, Anna?
Well, I think one moment was when Angie and Danny and the Lord were playing pool. To be honest, I found it quite funny when the Lord was talking and he hit the table a bit and those balls fell into both sides. I thought that was quite a good moment that put his character into a different light and show that he was quite tough. And also the moment where he was into that chamber locked and he made with those stones out of nowhere, because as you do have stones in a chamber that you're in and some rope, and he started pulling by them to the window. And I actually thought he was gonna escape through that window, but no, apparently he had that that thing to fall onto the other two bad guys. And I thought that was quite funny and unexpected, because I thought he would have just went through the window, right? Because it wasn't that high. But it was quite unexpected. The end was a bit sad, to be honest, when I didn't expect Angie to die. I hoped he was going to live. And when he told Danny that he will never be caged and that was their promise, it was, I don't know, a bit emotional. But it was good in the end.
Possibly one of the most emotional scenes that we had in the 24-episode run of The Persuaders, which, although it addresses a number of key areas and still has that sense of fun, obviously, as we said, shot on location in most of the high hot spots of Western Europe, at least. That was a moment where it does actually create a pause in the whole essence of the whole piece. Of course, you could say that Brett Sinclair was simply demonstrating British resourcefulness in terms of how to actually extricate yourself successfully from captivity in a way that clearly bodes well for the country, as a role model at least. What about your favourite characters?
Oof. That's tough, because I really liked everyone, but I told you those scenes when they were fighting and you could see that they weren't actually really touching each other made me question it. I'd say it was Lord Sinclair, because I really liked the way the light they put him in and how he was the tall and confident person and character. But I also liked Tony Curtis, who played Danny Wild. He was the way he was defending his friend and that he knows it and that he's sure he's not it, and the look he gave to Angie when he realized that he was the hitman. So probably these two, Danny and Dolores Sinclair.
We've been asking people, in terms of automobiles, one of those rare routines, are you Aston Martin or Ferrari? Which one floats your boat, Anna?
Well, it's a tough one, because I do watch Formula One. And I do.
So you follow Max Verstappen then on a parade, basically?
Well, I'm one of those few people that still think that, you know, there are other drivers rather than Max, even though I think they're trying to take him out right now and put him out all of the drivers. But anyway, I'm going to go with Ferrari. I cannot cheat on them. It's Ferrari till the end.
Interesting. I think that probably makes it to all then, in terms of the overall reference of where things are going. Jared certainly went for Ferrari. Victoria and myself were Aston Martins. I think Jessica might have tipped the balance, actually, yourself and Jessica. So it may probably be the Ferrari just about sneaks ahead in terms of that side of things there. Okay, we've already said the next episode takes us even further back into ITC's back catalogue. We'll be looking at The Champions and To Trap a Rat, in which we also see the way in which secret agents can actually operate, even if they've got superpowers, with marvellous hairstyles. In addition to that, we do have Peanuts, which I'm sure Jessica will look forward to as well. But in terms of this particular episode, what is your score going to be for The Persuaders, the Val Guest-directed episode, Angie, Angie?
So, overall, as I said, it was a very good episode. I enjoyed it. But at times, it just wasn't quite as I was. It didn't reach my expectations at all times. So I'm going to give it a 7.5.
You live your life in the songs you hear on the rock and roll radio. And when a young girl doesn't have any friends, that's a really nice place to go. Folks hoping you'd turn out cool,
but they had to take you out of school. You're a little touched, you know, ain't you, baby? Lovers appear in your room each night and they whirl you across the floor, but they always seem to fade away when your daddy taps on your door. Angie girl, are you all right? Tell the radio good night, all alone once more, Angie baby. At night through her window blind, I see your folks have gone away. Would you dance with me today? I'll show you how to have a good time, Angie baby.
Angie baby, Angie baby.
When he walks in her room, he feels confused, like he walked into a play. And the music's so loud, it spins him around till his soul has lost its way. And as she turns the volume down, he's getting smaller with the sound. It seems to pull him off the ground toward the radio he found, never to be found. The headlines read that a boy disappeared and everyone thinks he died, except a crazy girl with a secret lover who keeps her satisfied. It's so nice to be insane, no one asks you to explain. Radio by your side, Angie baby. Well, maybe, maybe.
Thank you.